Okay, everybody should have some notes. And we're going to continue in the What to Do When You Don't Know What to Do series. We've had a slightly different focus each week, obviously. This week, the big word is responsibility. And I know we've used that before, but we're going to put a little bit more emphasis on it. So let's start by just reading the quote at the top of the first page. You're not here merely to make a living. You are here in order to enable the world to live more amply, with greater vision, with a finer spirit of hope and achievement. You are here to enrich the world, and you impoverish yourself if you forget the errand. All right, just an interesting quote to open up with. I think there's a degree of that being an aspiration that we all have, but how true is that for you now? Okay, so I said today we're going to look at responsibility. There's an interesting, it wasn't my intent to mimic or copy somebody, but I realized last Sunday I had some really good reflection time. I had, a longer than normal time at the gym, then went for a bike ride, and had some time to really think some things through. And I realized that the tagline for Andy Stanley's Stand Alone series that he does on Saturday night. So he does a television show that's broadcast to the Atlanta market, and then it's repurposed into a podcast. And it's Your Move with Andy Stanley. It's not his regular Sunday morning church service. The tagline for that is how to make better choices and live with fewer regrets. And I thought to myself, that could have been an interesting tagline for what we're doing right now, because it really embraces what we're talking about. How to make better choices and live with fewer regrets.
It's an only free app.
Oh, yeah, it is. So, we have moved through a collection of ideas that I call filters through which we can make better decisions. Does anybody remember them? We started out with a collection of things. Does it pass this test? Does it pass this test? Does it pass this test? As it passes these tests, as it goes through these gates, you can say with confidence, okay, I can continue on toward this objective that I'd like. Does anybody remember some of them? The first one?
Fitness.
Okay. That aside, our spiritual fitness equips us to be able to do all of this. Thank you. But we said that there are a series of, and we diagrammed them out here on the board. Now, it is so important to remember this, because how many of you have found that you don't have a guidebook in front of you when you make choices? So you'd better remember and be able to process and think through this stuff on the fly as you're making decisions. So the only way to be able to make better choices and live with fewer regrets is if you have this stuff inside of you and can easily recollect it. The first law is, does the prospect of doing this thing or exercising this option keep me within God's law of love? Okay, that was benchmark number one. Inside of that, we introduced a different one last week. Does this opportunity facilitate any ability for me to bring some sort of glory to God? In other words, would it honor or dishonor God? Now, it's not like that is the only thing that by which we make a choice, but does it have the potential to do this, or does it run the risk of dishonoring God? Now, there were two more that we said there was a degree of overlap between. Anybody remember them?
What's the cost?
Huh?
General
and specific, but, okay, we said, does it fit within your purpose? Which means that you're going to have to invest a significant amount of time in understanding what you believe your unique purpose is. Now, we all have general purposes, but we have some more specific purposes. So I said last week, I think it was, that I believe that one of my unique purposes is to be able to speak to men. All right, whether I do it well, whether I have the skill sets or not, that's a different question. But I believe it's one of my purposes. Okay, so does it align nicely with your purpose? Why is that important? Yeah, why is making decisions that align with what you believe to be your general purpose for being here, why is that important? Two big things, okay? First off, it's not going to distract me. Right? If I believe that I have a purpose and I exercise an option to do something that pulls me off purpose, that's a distraction of my purpose. Why would I ever want to intentionally choose to do things that don't in some way support my purpose for living? Yes, yes, you will. And he introduced another idea. No matter how exciting, no matter how passionate, no matter how exciting your purpose for living, no matter how passionate you are about living within that purpose, there's going to be dull, difficult days. Right? Ask anybody who runs a business, anybody who's a parent, anybody who's in ministry. Ask anybody who feels a call to something specific if it's all fun and games, hugs and kisses and roses. It's not. There's difficult days. And so, and this is where the responsibility word comes in. I have a responsibility if I have made a choice to decide, do I continue today to live within that choice that I've made? We said several weeks ago that all of life really is just making a few big choices and then managing those big choices for the remainder of your life. You made a choice once in your life to get married. Every new day you wake up, you have a choice, am I going to remain in that commitment or not? And how effectively am I going to remain in it? So make sure that you make choices that align with your purpose. It makes it easier to responsibly follow through later on. And this is where a lot of people get hung up. I can't tell you how many people I have talked to in the last 10 years alone that they've made a choice and now they're wondering if they have an option out. And I mean, it's the kind of a choice that you shouldn't want to opt out of, and I understand why they want to opt out of it, because at this moment, they're in a difficult season in life. And really, they're looking to talk with someone, not to talk them into staying in the commitment they've made. They're really hoping that they can find some validation to allow them an easy out. You know what I'm saying? All right. The next filter that we pass something through. So we've looked at three so far. Now that we've gone through them, can you quickly tick them off? What's the first one? Inside God's, anybody? Law of love. Okay. Next one. This is tough, man. Next one. Does it have the potential to bring glory to God? Does it honor God? Or does it run the risk of dishonoring God? Next one. Does it fit within my general purpose for living? Anybody remember the next one? Does it fall within my skills, my talents, my giftings? In other words, would I be any good at this if I made a decision to go in this direction? Or does everything that I know about myself indicate that I would not do a good job at this? And so, and think about that in terms of the responsibility of follow through. How likely am I to continue in something that I'm awful at?
You can't always judge that.
Well,
you're not always the best judge of that. Someone said to somebody somewhere, you know what? You'd be good at that. Nah. Yeah, you would.
Okay, there is generally some evidence that somebody else can find that you'd be good at it, though. If you and everyone around you says you probably wouldn't be good at that.
I think it's important when we're talking about purpose, talk to somebody else. Don't just take your own sort of thing and think that it's going to be, because the enemy will talk you out of all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
And with the doubt and discouragement, you're not good enough, you're not going to make money, like John says, you call it the ball.
Can we come to that in just a couple of minutes? Because I don't disagree with you, but we're actually going to address that. All right. That pretty well covers, well, we said there was one final thing. And we said that within that, all those boundaries, you're not the only one who lives there. So how is this choice going to impact the others that you are in one way or another connected with? That's the final litmus test. So, does it pass God's law of love? Does it have the potential to bring honor and glory to God versus dishonor to God? Does it fit within my general purpose? Does it fit within my skill sets? And how will it impact the other people that I live with or that I share life with or that our paths just intersect? How is it going to affect them? Well, by the time you've run that potential choice through all of those, you've got a clearer idea of whether you should say yes or no. It's still not black and white, so to speak, but there's certainly a clearer pathway for you. Okay. Let's Let's read a little bit here. Below the Andy Stanley year move thing. We want God to give us a map, but what he offers us is a compass. We want a map because it will show us where we are, where we need to go. But life changes so frequently that a map would do us no good. A compass tells us the direction, and that's actually helpful. How many of you have ever had this experience? How many of you have ever driven with a GPS that had out-of-date information? Anybody? Right? They build a new road, and the GPS says, turn right here. And you can see, at one point in our country's past, you could have turned right there. But you can no longer turn right there unless you're going to drive into a barricade or a cornfield. Because they've moved the road, but the GPS mapping that you have isn't current. And that's what's being said here. The other reality is, and we talked about this some in week one, but I want to really emphasize this, you and I would like at times for God to just decide for us. Think about your objective as a parent. What do you want your children to become? Is it your dream in life, when they're 30 years old, that you tag along next to them to be able to help them make all their decisions? No. What do you do as your children are growing up? Or what do we recommend that you do? Equip them with the necessary skills and understanding so that they can decide for themselves in the moment. Because, among other things, the choices that they will have to make are going to be different than the choices that you had to make, and the circumstances under which they'll have to make them are different sometimes than the circumstances under which you had to make them.
Well, what do your parents say? I'm just going to be here to do this for you.
Well, some people's parents did, other people's parents didn't. But that's true. And in the same way, while God still walks alongside of us, It is desire to help us to grow up into maturity and understanding. That the proof of this is in the vast body of scriptural adjournment, we'll say, that says, study the law, gain wisdom. Those two things. Go through the books of the Old Covenant and see how many times, in one way or another, those two themes resound. Study the law, acquire wisdom. As a matter of fact, we're going to look at a couple of verses in a minute. Why would that be necessary if God wanted to make all of your choices for you? What would the point be to ever acquiring wisdom if you were not going to use it? Why would you be commanded to study the law if you were never going to be put in a place where you had a decision to make that would require you to know the law? It's God's expectation for us that we will choose, and therefore, when we say, I don't know what to do, God, show me your will, in certain cases, we are simply abdicating our own responsibility to choose and saying, God, you make the choice for me.
You say it's two laws. You're going to follow along with mine, the world. Which one do you choose? Usually when you chicken out,
And incidentally, there's another thing, and I've kind of heard this subtly implied a few times here already. Well, we have to obey the law. We're believers. We have to follow God's law. All right? And to which I would say, how many of us sinned this week? Okay, and I don't mean like something minor. I mean, you were disappointed with yourself. Right, you were disappointed. I behaved in a way that somehow, I look back and I'm not really happy with what I did, and I know I should have done better. Have you done that this week? Yeah, me too. You know what that proves? You don't have to be a Christ follower. You've chosen to be a Christ follower. Because the minute you went off and did what you didn't want to do, you were a something else follower. I don't know what it was you were following. You were following your own selfish desire. You were following... Huh?
Following yourself.
Okay, so you became a self-follower.
You're supposed to follow at times. Sinner. You're still a sinner. Sometimes you're still just a sinner. You still have... You act like a sinner. You walk like a sinner. You talk like a sinner.
Are we going to submit or not? Surrender or not?
I don't know. But as a Christ follower, the Holy Spirit is the one that made you realize that that was something that you were having.
Right.
That's the difference.
You can't.
You were. Just move on.
Well, we're not. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I want us to read these three verses together. The beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom. Though it cost all you have, get understanding. And then in parentheses, I put insight there. I don't know where it was that I saw this movie. It was within the past couple of weeks, and there's these two men standing there together. One's a little older than the other. And the plot line of this movie is pretty well developed by this point in time. The two men, as the story has played out, have gotten to know each other. And the one guy, slightly younger than the other, says to the older gentleman, he says, "I wish you would just shut up. You're help is not helpful. When you try to give me wisdom, it's not very wise. You say things like, when I do something and I'm disappointed with it, you just say, 'Well, don't do that again.' Well, that's not helpful wisdom," he says. "You don't tell me how I should not do that or why I should not do that. You just say that when I say this has not worked out well, you just say, 'Well, then don't do that again.' That's not helpful." Well, so let's take a look at this verse again. The beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom. There's not a comma there. There's not a semicolon. There's a period there. The beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom. Don't you want to ask a little question there? Come on.
Well, if you're reading through, because I know this is a great verse this morning, if you're reading through, he tells you how. Don't forget your parents. Listen to what they tell you. You know, if your parents are gone, listen to somebody like your parents. You know, you get wisdom from those who have gone before you. That's what he said, essentially says. So if those who have gone before you say, "Hey, you know what? I tried that kid. I wouldn't do that. I told the kid yesterday, don't use something that short to go in that cylinder. You're going to drop it." Guess what he did?
Well, we know what he did, or you wouldn't be telling the story, Jim.
And so now I'm left with, and this is where the responsibility part comes up, because we'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm responsible to get that piece out of the cylinder without taking the top of it off, because I'm older and wiser.
Okay. Now, Jim's right. If you look at the broader body from which this is excerpted, yes, it does tell you. But there's a little key, a little hint right here, because it says, though it cost you all you have, get understanding. Right, now, if you know the context in which this is said, this is a father communicating with a child. The child, now as an adult, is sharing with an audience what his father has taught him. Okay, so this is the experience of a kid being told through that kid once he has grown up, saying, "This is what my dad told me, and here's what he said. Though it cost you all you have, get understanding." Now, right there is the clue that we're looking for. Now, it depends on who you are, what you have. But what do you usually have when you're young?
You say it too big. It's going to cost you all you have to get this, but it's worth more than all you have.
Don't run ahead. That's true. It does. What do you have? Because if this is going to be helpful information, you better know what you have that you can give up in exchange for wisdom. So what are some of the things that especially a young person has? Well, does a young person have a lot of wealth, typically?
No.
Probably not. So he's not going to be able to exchange his wealth, though it cost you all you have. But if he has no money, how much wisdom can you buy? If it takes you all you have to buy wisdom and you don't have any of that, how much wisdom can you get?
Time.
That's it. Time.
Spend all you have to get wisdom, and you'll get that back. Spend all you have to get wisdom, genuine wisdom, and that'll come back many, many times.
Now, here's the irony. What do we know about young people relative to time and making decisions? Just sum that up. Anybody?
Poor decisions.
Huh?
Poor decisions.
Why? And because
less life experience,
so they have less time and experience. But also, have you ever noticed that more young people are impetuous than old people? They want what they want, and they want it now. Well, it's called more than that, right? We have a word for getting everything you want and not being happy with it. It's called buyer's remorse. And it doesn't just happen the day after you buy it. Sometimes it's the decades after you buy it or get it or have it. Right? So time is one of those big things that you can give in exchange for getting wisdom. But that seems so slow and arduous. Now, incidentally, young people aren't the only people that are impetuous and want what they want and want it now. Have you made an impulse purchase in the last week? Okay, it might have only been for a pack of gum, right? It might have been for something more expensive than a pack of gum. I can see Jim probably has made an impulse purchase. And then he's had to ask, well, why did I buy that?
Oh, no, I don't ask that.
All right. Now, we've looked at three distinct words that we say are the essence of the heart. I'm going to ask you this question again. I seem to ask it like every week until we get it right. What is the heart? The seat of our decision and reasoning. What's the fuel of the heart then? The fuel of the heart. What does the heart run on? Huh?
You said the heart is the place of what?
Decision making and reasoning.
That's the left of our mind, will, and emotions.
Okay, so what does the heart run on then? We said the first thing is knowledge. And I have suggested to you repeatedly that despite how many times people would tend to dispute this, that following Christ is an intellectual process as much as anything else. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have actions as follow through, but there is intellect involved. There's no question about it. So what is knowledge? Or we'll say information.
Experience.
Data. Data coming in. It's everything that we receive. What's the difference between this and understanding? Which is an... Okay, we're going to introduce another word, and that will help bring light to this because we're a little off on this. Okay, so we have information, we have understanding. Understanding, we've said, is how the pieces of information connect together. So when I get one piece of information and I have nothing else to hang on to it or connect to it, I don't know what to do with this. Understanding is how all the pieces of information that I have link together. All right? That's why when your parents told you things when you were 10 and they spent a half an hour, they sat down and they gave you their most persuasive lecture on why this or that was good or bad, and you didn't remember any of it. You know why you didn't remember any of it? Because you didn't have enough other things and experiences to connect it to. Everything that they said was true, but you didn't know where to store that information, so it became useless information. Understanding is the ability to be able to synthesize and merge the pieces of information. Now what's wisdom? Knowing what to do with the acquired understanding. And so the scriptures, especially the Proverbs, I seem to be having rented lips today that don't want to work right, but the scriptures talk repeatedly about the three. So I need to get this, I need to meditate on the various pieces of this that I get to create understanding, and out of that understanding, I can create wise actions. All right, what's an insight then? Because I put that in parentheses. I think that's a really helpful word. Insight is the ability to be able to look into a situation and see it for what it really is. Okay, so your 10-year-old, I'll come back to you in just a moment, your 10-year-old acquires a new friend. Your 10-year-old thinks this new friend is great. Or your 13-year-old daughter acquires a new boyfriend. And she thinks this guy is great. It takes you all of 5 minutes to size this guy up and say to yourself, hopefully not out loud, this guy is a bum and the sooner she ditches him, the better. What is that? That's insight. Where does insight come from?
Experience.
It is stored away experience. And have you ever noticed that sometimes you can't even quite articulate why it is that you're sure about something? You're just pretty confident of it? You've got a hunch, and that's not always wrong. One of the reasons is because you have a large body of stored up knowledge that you can't put your finger on right now that tells you, chances are, this is a bad relationship. This needs more time. All right. So, the beginning of wisdom. Get wisdom, though it cost you everything. Get understanding. So, if we said that you start out getting this, what does it take to get this? We said understanding is the ability to merge the pieces of information. What does it take to create, to turn raw knowledge into understanding?
Well, for time.
That's the first thing. Time, but it's time plus something.
Experience. For me, when I read a scripture over and over and over and over again, you can't just read through it once. Because what if you're 15? A quarrelsome, better live on the corner of a roof than with a quarrelsome wife. Well, it doesn't even make any sense to me. So read what that means.
And then you get married and it all comes into light.
I can get wisdom about that. I know what that means. So for me, I have to keep pouring over the scriptures because I can't just memorize the whole book. I'm not, that doesn't happen. I have to keep pouring through it so that I can. It comes up and I get understanding, but I go, you know what? It was a precious.
Okay, so we have two contributions over here.
Yeah,
and for what it takes. Time and experience. How many of you have ever heard the phrase, and we've all heard it, but I'll ask you anyway, experience is the best teacher.
Sure.
That is such a pile of rubbish. Experience is only the best teacher if you carefully evaluate the experience. Have you ever known people to go back and do the same dumb thing, not a second time, but a third and a fourth time? I didn't ask if you've done that. I just asked if you knew someone. We show grace here. Why do people do that? Experience alone is not enough. It is evaluated experience that's necessary.
It's going to be a different outcome. You believe that there's going to be a different outcome this time. It's going to work out this time. It's going to work out this time. You know what? I got this.
Okay. But at least there's an evaluative process there. Okay? It is, if you say, well, I know more because I've just experienced it. No, it is only the time that it take that you take to evaluate and glean from something everything you can. Now, do you know people who have learned the wrong lesson from a past experience? Okay, so we have to learn the best things from the experience. Sometimes, what's that? Okay, sometimes we need some help. And we're going to come down to a list in just a moment. I want to finish these scriptures and then we're going to come down to a list because I think there are some things that we can give in exchange for wisdom and places where we can go to get wisdom. Okay, here's another interesting statement. We're going to assume it's from Solomon. Wisdom is like an inheritance, a good thing, and benefits those who see the sun. In other words, those who are alive. So wisdom helps those who are living. Wisdom is a shelter, as money is a shelter. Now that is a really interesting statement. But the advantage of knowledge is this, that wisdom preserves the life of the possessor. He said both money and wisdom are shelters. But only one actually has the potential to help preserve or prolong your life. Do you know what we've said about money? We've said this many times. There are certain things that are merely tools. Money is a tool. What does money help you to do? In the broadest of terms, what does money help you to do? Money helps you to get to the place you were going to go anyway, just gets there faster. If you're poor and you have bad understanding, it's going to take you longer to get to a bad outcome. Right? Why do you think sports professionals can sometimes get to really bad outcomes really quickly? Because they've got a lot of money to burn to get there a lot faster. Right? The prodigal son. Here's the amazing thing about that. Take the story of the prodigal son, or the whole story of the prodigals, actually, and apply it and compare it to this. The young son actually got wisdom quicker than the older son. The older son was still dumb when he lived in his father's home after the younger son came home. Now, it's not that we wouldn't advise getting wisdom this way, but actually the younger son, because he had money at his disposal, got to the end of himself quicker than the older son did. Money helps you to get to wherever you're going quicker. So you better make sure you know that where you're going is a good place to go. All right, last verse. Though now for a little while, you may have to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes, even though refined by fire, may be proven genuine and may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. Now, you're probably curious as to why I put that there. There's a lot of talk in the Proverbs about the value of wisdom. Anybody see a commonality there? Frequently, the writers of Proverbs refer to wisdom as being of more value than gold. Like if you had to pick more wisdom or more wealth, and it's exactly what's being said here when Solomon says about the shelters of money and wisdom. He said, if you had to pick between all the gold in the world or all the wisdom in the world, which should you pick? Now, Peter, later on reflecting on this, and I can almost picture this as being a moment of reflection where he's sitting there, he's meditating on this, he's thinking about his own experiences and what's valuable to him, and he says, you know, come to think of it, tested faith is really important too. So wisdom is really valuable, but actually tested, proven faith is more valuable. Now, what's tested faith? That's the process. That is testing. What is tested faith?
I know God's going to provide for me.
That's tested faith. Okay? Everything else is just a theory. Right? When you start to follow Christ, let's just be candid about this, right? It's all a theory. And you hope the heck it's true because you have no past experience at following. You know a few people. Remember what we have said repeatedly. Most people don't come to Christ because they come to Christ. They come to the people who know Christ and trust the people who know Christ, and they look at their lives and they say, well, this seems to be working for him, so I guess I can trust Jesus too. What's their body of personal experience with trusting Jesus? It's zero. So everything that they have is theory. So tested faith is the process of turning what was theory into proven experience so that even if you can't articulate exactly why you know that you trust, even if you can't prove that God exists or prove that this will happen, you have enough body of experience to say, I'm okay with this. And so Peter says, that is every bit as valuable, in my mind, as wisdom. So I would say the two together are valuable. All right, one final thing before we get into the list. All right? When do we need wisdom? Before or after we've made a decision?
Before or before? Well, after you make a decision, it becomes information and knowledge. It's only wisdom that we need before.
Okay. The truth is, we need it both times. We need it before we've made a decision, but we also need it in order to manage the day-to-day. Remember what we said, one big decision, thousands of small decisions that back up the one decision that we've made. So we still need wisdom. All right, how many of you have found yourself in a crisis point where you had an intersection between, I don't know, but I need to choose? Right, haven't we all faced that? So at that point in time, what we're saying is, I haven't enough information or enough wisdom to make the choice, but I have to make the choice anyway. So it's kind of like this Chinese proverb that we've all heard, when's the best time to plant a tree? 10 years ago. When's the second best time to plant a tree? Today. Here is one of the big picture ideas that we need to absorb. If you want to make better decisions in the future, you need to begin today to absorb more information and process it, create understanding and wisdom. It doesn't do any good to wait perpetually until the moment of crisis and then say, well, I need to get wisdom then. How much wisdom can you get in 5 minutes? Look at what it said here. Though it cost you all you have, get understanding. Though it cost you all you have. Point of personal confession. How many of us would acknowledge that we're at least a little impetuous and would rather just go out and do than take time to think? Do you understand what this is saying? This is saying that the person who is going to, whenever you say, I just wish I knew what to do, remember that every time you have that experience and begin to own the fact that perhaps you have not invested heavily enough in preparing to make decisions. Do you believe you're going to have another critical decision to make before the year is out? Most of us will. And another one the year after that? Of course. And another one? If you have kids, you may have multiple important decisions to make within 1 year. The best time to plant a tree? 10 years ago. The second best time? Start today. Since most of us, and I, again, just my personal observation, my personal experience with men, most men are eager to get out the door in the morning and do something. I get that. Now, I'm not saying the morning is when you have to do this. I just know, for me anyway, the morning is when I sit, I read from a variety of sources, but I also have blocks of time. Like Sundays, I will do a lot of this. I don't care how you do it, but if you wish to make better choices next year, you need to find a rhythm in your life that allows you to get this, turn it into this, which you can then use for this when you need it.
Yeah, but you said rhythm. Rhythm requires discipline. That's going to be changed.
Okay. If you want to make better choices in the future, then you're going to have to do this today. Now, I suspect that the only way to convince some people of this is to, if you can't meditate on the good things, meditate on the pain of your experiences from past bad choices. Let's read this together. The time to get wisdom is before you'll need it, but since you do not know which sort of wisdom you'll next need or when it is then obvious that we should be in a constant pursuit of wisdom. Knowing that while it might seem as if we're taking the slower and more arduous path, that in the end our forward progress will actually be faster, even if we are in the moment moving more slowly.
Days of thunder.
Do you understand what that means? Have you ever rushed ahead? Here's the phrase that we laughingly use to describe this. Well, we might be lost, but we're sure making great time. Right? I've actually jokingly said that when I have been lost.
That's good for you, Trevor Grace. We used up the tires, we ran out of gas, but boy, your lap times were great for 5 minutes. And now look. Tires are shot, you're coming into the pits, you're out of gas, motors breathing oil like nobody's business. Because you were impetuous. You couldn't lift just a little.
And we all know the tug. The tug is, I really feel like I should be getting out and doing something. Right? It almost feels lazy to sit there and just think. It almost feels irresponsible, right? The grass needs to be cut, the oil needs to be changed in the car, there's a hole in the roof, whatever it is, right? There's 1,000 things that need to be done. Okay? To which I, a long time ago, said this to my wife one day. In the end, one day, I am going to die. The grass will keep growing, therefore the grass will win and I will lose. So I may as well just accept this in my lifetime that certain things are going to win and I'm not. Therefore, I should apply myself to the things that really matter.
The grass is always going to be there. It's always going to be there. You'll always have the core. You'll always have the core. But she did a better thing. She saw me out.
Okay, let's take a look at these seven things, actually. All right, sources of wisdom, ways to acquire wisdom. Ron, why didn't you ask?
Okay.
All right, the first, the counsel of God. All right, so we obtain that by asking directly through prayer. What's the condition of asking and expecting to receive wisdom?
Believe and not doubt.
Okay, believe and not doubt. Why? Well, James actually describes it, and I'm sure you're citing James. Why?
The one who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind.
Right. What does that mean?
You're not sure if God's actually going to be there for you.
You're not sure if it's God's answer. Okay. God, please give me some indication as to what would be a wise course of action. Now, you're not asking God to make your decision. You're asking God to help you to understand the implications of the decision. So you ask, and then you have ideas, and you say, well, I'm not sure if that's from God. Which one's from God? Well, I'm not sure. Right? Ever experienced that? So what have you just been? Double-minded. Right? You've asked God. God shows up and says, have you considered this? Now, each of us needs to acquire the ability to hear and discern something that's God's voice versus not. And that takes some time. But over a period of time, if you learn to trust that God and actually believe that God will give you wisdom, then you can act on it. How else do we get the counsel of God? So we've said asking is one way. How else? Okay. When it comes to the counsel of God, I'm going to say, do you have some scriptural reading, something that you do? And I never emphasize 7 days a week. Why? Because I'm a realist. And because people are busy. But you better have a rhythm. You better do something 2 or 3 days a week. You better have a predictable... Some people go to the gym every day. Remember what we talked about, fitness, right? We opened this up, I said, with a sort of a bait and switch where we talked about spiritual fitness. And we compared it to physical fitness. Spiritual fitness is the ability to be able to have the inner man master his outer world, to do the things that are necessary, in the same way that physical fitness is the ability for the physical man to master the physical challenges that confront him. All right? So, do you have a plan for investing in yourself regularly? So those two things. And it sounds suspiciously like, are you ready for this? Prayer and Bible reading. Right? But I didn't want to quite say it like that because that sounds a little bit old school. But in a way, in your own way, make this current and relevant to you. Some sort of communication with God, some sort of ingestion of His Word that you actually take time to process. Next thing, the counsel of other wise people. Where do you find wise people? Okay, your silence is concerning to me. That means that some of... Actually, that's not even what I was fishing for. We seek out wise people. Wise people don't just naturally flow into our life. You've got to go on the hunt for wise people. The really cool thing about it is this. We have wise people at our fingertips every day. Right? There are wise people that have set down their work in writing. There are wise people that communicate and we have access to them online or through audios or through videos. There is a lot of good wisdom out there. You don't need to personally know the wisest people in the world. You just need to have access to what they've written or what they've said. So, do you have, and remember, we're talking about building a treasure trove or a library of wisdom that's going to prepare you to make the next decision. That means it needs to be part of your ongoing rhythm of life to be seeking out the wisdom of others. Even when you say, well, I don't think I have an immediate need for this. You will. Just be patient. Or it will help to inform some other understanding. The counsel and the encouragement, the rebuke and the challenge of good friends. And I don't just mean acquaintances. I don't just mean backslapping good old boys. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a few backslapping good old boys in your life. Everybody needs one, I guess. I don't know. But we need a few people that challenge us. Here's the frustrating thing that I've noticed. I don't like it when my friends challenge me. I really don't. I don't like it when they're kind of annoying or they tell me things that I already know but I really would prefer not to hear. It's annoying. I almost want to not have them as friends at that moment. But what kind of friends are they being at that moment? The best kind. So we need to be able to sit in the company of people that we know. Well, what defines a friend? If you had to leave here today and go pick some friends to surround yourself with that can improve your life, What are the defining qualities that you would say, I want this to be true of this person?
What's the saying, surround yourself with like quality people and you become that person?
Okay, so we become a lot like the people that we hang around with. So one of the defining things is, I would like to become a little bit more like him. Right? If the people that you hang around with, you think, geez, I'd never want to become like him. Find a new class of friends. What else? They need to know you well enough to be able to speak into your life with some sort of intelligence. Remember that we're looking for friends to help us with wisdom, which is going to help us to make better decisions. And we said that two of the things that we use to help us make better decisions is my purpose and my skills. Therefore, the people that are going to speak into my life need to know me at least well enough a little bit so that they understand why I'm what I'm living toward, what I'm living for, and how I'm uniquely qualified to do that. Otherwise, they might recommend something stupid, like just because my last name is Singer that I go pursue a career in singing, right? That would be bad advice. They need to know you well enough. Next thing, experience. And we have to put there, evaluated experience. We've talked about that, so I don't think that we need to go on much more with that. Personal search and study. Now, I've shared this with you here many times. A lot of the topics that we end up exploring are simply the outgrowth of my personal curiosity or my personal inadequacy or something that I've personally had to deal with or struggle through, and I think, you know what, I'm probably not the only one, so let's explore this together. Do you have questions about life that you are willing to invest time in exploring? Do you have questions about your future as a father and a husband that would compel you to explore how to be better at that? Do you have questions about your career and how to master your career that would compel you to dig deeper into that? All right. Personal reflection and meditation. It's again, this is the processing part of this. It's sort of like with the experience. And then this last part, which is faith, which acts according to the body of available knowledge and puts things to the test. So here's what I mean by that. We acquire wisdom at times by taking measured risks. How do you know if you can trust God?
Try it.
So how do I come to the point where I know I can trust God?
Experience.
In other words, I have to take a risk. The first time you trust something to God that you say, I couldn't do this by myself, I wouldn't risk this by myself, normally this is not the thing that I would do, but you believe it is consistent with God's Word, it's consistent with other people that you know that have at times followed God faithfully, and you put it to the test. There's no way to know if God is trustworthy unless you actually take the risk to step off the cliff and find out if God is there. And I know that's difficult, but that's it. So if you want to find out if God is trustworthy, right? Is there anyone here who would not like a testimony of being able to say, well, God has been trustworthy in my life? You know how you get that testimony, right? You've got to put yourself out there and at risk at times.
It's interesting to me that God says the Malachi verses on tithing are testing me to see if I'm faithful. Our world defines our success by finance. God says, "Find my faith." The hardest area for us, humanity, is meditation. God says, "Start there." All the rest falls into place. We trust Him with what is worthless in heaven. We begin to receive what has eternal value, the lives of others.
Okay. More?
I just see that as the dichotomy of Scripture versus the world, that we need money, but God says, give me my 10% in faith and see if I don't open the storehouses. The one area where God says to test him, we're invited to test him. He doesn't say, test me and see if I'll provide for your daily needs. He's got that. And yet we don't believe that part until we're faithful with money. So our world values the financial system, and God says, I don't care about that. I care about your faith. Faith? Faith is, do this, and we say here every week. We give to God cheerfully. That it's not out of obligation, but it's out of opportunity. And God takes us from there.
And I want to put a slightly different spin on what he's saying. Because remember, we're talking about tests of faith in a measured and reasonable way, not a rash way. Right? So if the litmus test, the benchmark from which we would say, well, I'm going to test God and prove if he's faithful, would be God saying, give me 90% of your money. How many people would cross that threshold? Right? That would be almost inconceivable. Here, you keep 10%, see if you can manage on that. I'd like 90%, and I'll prove that I'm faithful. How many of you take that bet? Right? 10%. As staggering a sum as that seems to feel like at times, 10% is a reasonable step. And that's what God invites us into. Next, reasonable steps that test whether God is trustworthy. It's not as if God doesn't, as the scriptures say, understand our frame, understand who we are. God does understand who we are. And so the steps that he asks us to take are generally measured steps that feel like a risk to us, but are not so overwhelmingly risky that we could never see or imagine ourselves doing them. And that is how we acquire a body of wisdom, a faith that is tested, that later on in life, when the next decision comes, remember this is all about making decisions, when the next decision comes, I can look back on the repository of examples in my own life of faith that has been tested and say, you know, I think I can trust making this next step. Okay. So we're going to look at something else. We said that the theme for the morning is responsibility. So again, this past week, doing some reflecting, and I was struck by these two things. I don't know if any of you have heard or seen this statistic recently, but it suggested that as much as 30% of our economy is based on independent workers today. In other words, people who work for themselves as opposed to people who just get a job somewhere, whether they get a job for a small business, a large business, or whatever. In other words, everything from the Uber driver to the independent freelance coder to the independent journalist or whatever, a greater percentage of our population is operating independently to gain their income than ever before. Now, that takes a degree of responsibility. Would you agree? Right? Who makes you get up and go to work every day when you work for yourself? Now here's the irony. At the same time, when one percentage of our population is exhibiting a degree of responsibility that has never existed before, another larger percentage of the population is trying to get out of responsibility. And these two streams literally run side by side in this country. People who say, well, it's not my fault. I want somebody else to fix this problem for me. What has the government done for me lately? And I don't want to go political, but really, there's all these... Somebody else needs to fix this problem. There's not a day goes by that you don't hear on the news something about somebody complaining about how somebody else needs to fix their problem. I am amazed that these... Literally, I am responsible for my life. Somebody else needs to be responsible for me. And those two currents are running side by side in our culture. Why? I think there's something else at work here. Here's what I believe. Right? And most people don't see this. The 30% over here, they actually do. We have more and better choices available to us today than any previous generation. I mean, literally, we have more options and more opportunities and more things at our fingertips, more ways. Here's the way Richard Branson words it, and I realize you might not want to take Richard Branson and use him as a paragon of theological excellence, but here's the thing that he says that's so true. He says, opportunities are like buses. Don't worry if you miss the last one. There'll be another one along in 5 minutes. Do you know what he's saying? That we live in a world of so many choices and so many options that it's almost impossible to miss a good option. But what happens when people are overloaded with options? And they're fearful. There's so many choices to make, and here's the way we said it a couple of weeks ago. That the goal of making good choices is to get to a place where we have more good choices. That bad choices, generally speaking, take us to places where we have fewer good choices and limited options, right? That's by definition what bad choices do. Bad choices take us to places where we have poorer options, poorer choices, and fewer things to choose from. Good choices take us to better. So my question then is, logically speaking, if I make a few good choices in a row, where does that take me to? Huh? A better place, but how many more options are there? A lot more, aren't there? What do I do with the more options? Now here's the funny thing. At a time when we have more options available to us than ever before, it seems like we're willing to invest less time in becoming wise to make good choices. Great, we have a female audience here too. See, 200 years ago, you didn't have many options. If your father was a coal miner and you lived in West Virginia, what did you do for a living, probably?
Cry.
Cry, yes, you did. Right? You had only a couple of options. You could hope that there was an opening at the general store where you might be able to stay above ground and sell whatever coal miners need, or you went below ground and you mined coal. If your father was a shipbuilder, that's probably what you did. I mean, really study our country's past and you see that most people had far fewer options. Today we have so many and such an abundance of options available to us, and we simply don't know how to manage them well. This is the critical role that wisdom plays in helping us to live life. Now here's the other thing. We've said this again and again, and I'm going to double down on this now, because once you've made certain choices, you're going to have to live with and manage them. God expects us to follow through on the choices that we've made. That's what responsibility is all about. So, have you ever made what you felt was a good choice? Now, here we're going to bring this into a bigger picture. Have you ever made what you felt was a good choice, only to find that that good choice being played out was going to be in conflict with something else that you wanted in life? Nobody? You made what you believed was a good career choice. It was going to take you to a better place in your career. And now that choice is starting to bring conflict in other areas of your life. You made a good relational choice. You thought it was a good relational choice. And now it's starting to bring pressure on your work or some other area. So there's another phrase that I want to introduce here. And it pertains to your future. Decide all of what you want before you choose any of what you want. And I'll repeat that. Decide all of what you want before you choose any of what you want. And I realize some smart person's going to say, well, I don't know all what I want, and I won't know all of what I want. That's true, but to the degree that you're able, decide all of what you want before you decide any of what you want. Before we break that down, why do you suppose that's true?
Can you repeat that one more time? Decide all you want.
Decide all of what you want before you choose any of what you want. In other words, map out your whole life before you make a choice about an individual component of your life.
How does this fit into my big picture?
Exactly. And if you don't have a big picture first, then you'll make independent choices in silo mode that may run contrary to something in some other area of your life. And we've all experienced that. So then the question is, and I'm going to borrow something that Zig Ziglar used for years, and I added a few more to it. We'll say down here, it's probably on the back side of yours. Do you have a bold text that says the Ziglar wheel with additions? Okay. So these are some of the segments of life. Health, finance, relationship, career, personal development, spiritual development, physical, intellectual, social, and family. These are some of the big building block areas of your life. And the idea is... He's back in the day. He was a motivational speaker, right? Christian-oriented, motivational speaker, well-known for his sales training material and his life management material. Would you say that sums it up? I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. So he had a reduced version of this. It was a wheel, and it had eight like pie pieces in it. I think it was eight. Well, these are some of them. Health, finance, relationship, career, personal, spiritual, physical, intellectual, social, and family. And his suggestion is have goals, have aspirations, have a storyline, if you will, for what you want each area of your life to look like. And with that in place, then you can start to make decisions that will help you to balance all the areas of your life. Now, why is this important? Remember what we said. The big challenge is to manage responsibly the choices we've already made. All right? So let's say you've made a choice to get married. The two of you have made a choice to have children, and you've made some career choices. And now you're finding that there's conflict there. All right? We've all experienced that. What's our tendency? Our tendency is that when we need more to get to some point in life, we start to rob. Okay? One of the great ways that men do this is they need more career time. All right, so hypothetically, maybe they're working 50 hours a week, but that's not quite enough. So they need, in order to be successful, they need 60 hours a week in order to achieve whatever that benchmark of success is. Where does that time come from? Or, if they're clever, they only steal a few hours from each of several other things. But, yes, okay, so one of the places that a man will steal in order to get the career time, and I know steal seems like a harsh word, so we'll say borrow without the intent to repay. How's that? So, we have career time, and he needs 10 hours a week, so he might get some of it from family time. Where else does he get it from? Okay, so he'll deprive himself of some personal things. Now, I don't care if a guy deprives himself of his 15th hour of golf for the week. But have you ever met a guy who's so uptight because he's not had an hour to relax in weeks? Hey, go back to folding clothes. You're not welcome here.
Sure.
Where else does he steal from? Rest and relaxation. Okay, so he's going to steal from his marriage, John said. He's going to steal from his time with God. Stop right there. He's going to steal from his time with God. How do we say, what do we say time with God is useful for? Gaining wisdom. In other words, and what is wisdom good for? Anybody? For making better choices in the future. What is the man who steals time with God and time for personal reflection and time for personal rejuvenation? What is he actually stealing from in addition to his present? He's stealing from his future self.
That's right.
But does he see that in the moment? He can't. It's impossible. So if you don't want to be in a position, and you get the picture. We don't need to break this down further. Now, if you happen to be feeling guilty right now, it's not because I'm trying to make you feel guilty. We all do this. Okay, and we're not talking about stealing in a day-to-day basis, okay? There's days when you might have to work 15, 16 hours. That's just the way life is some days. But if, in the big picture, over 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, a year, there is a general trend in your life to perpetually be robbing from one area of life that you said you have a commitment in and putting it into another area, then your life is out of balance. So life balance is not giving equal portions of your time to all the important areas of your life. Life balance is giving the proper amount of time to each of the important areas in your life.
Yeah, I think one of the problems, though, is corporate America, this day and age, demands that of you. I mean, there's been things written about how much unused vacation time goes to the wayside because people feel the expectations of their job make them work those 50, 60 hours a week, and you know, there's only so many hours in a day, including the time for rest. And I think maybe that actually, you know, when you talk about 30% of the people who are functioning independently, is I think it's because there's a group of people who, particularly younger people, who now feel that they don't want to be part of that corporate culture that demands and robs you of life, basically.
Thank you, Jim.
Not to get political.
But they expect the other people to help.
Okay, a couple more big points here. So we've said repeatedly that most people only want what they don't have, right? You only want what you don't have. Why? Because if you already have it, you don't want it. Okay, I mean, it was sort of obvious, but we only want what we don't have, but what does that also make a possibility for us? It's that we minimize the value of what we already do have. Because our sights are legitimately, a lot of times, there's nothing wrong with this. There's nothing wrong with wanting what you don't have. The problem with being focused perpetually on wanting what we don't have is we don't take time to inventory what we already do have and that we find valuable. So there's two different kinds of, we'll say, responsibility when it comes to choice. It is maintaining and obtaining. Perhaps I should use some of my personal reflection time this week to learn to spell. Take a guess. This is taking care of what I have. This is getting what I don't have. Now, we jokingly ask this question a lot. How many of you have ever gotten something, worked hard to get something, only to find out you didn't really want it once you got it? Now, here is the big thing in life that we need to understand. For everything that we obtain, there will then, from that moment on, be a cost to maintain. So before you had a marriage, and before you had a wife, there might have been a goal to obtain one of each, a marriage and a wife, right? That might have been a goal. But now that you have obtained, you have to maintain. That might have been the most profound thing he said all morning. Oi.
Take care of maintenance contract.
Do you understand what this means? See, a lot of us, we want what we don't have, so we're in obtain mode. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem is that it costs a great deal to maintain what we already do have. So here's the big question to ask of yourself. Remember, all this is oriented towards decisions. Could I make your life easier if I could help you to understand that you really don't truly want what you think you want right now, and therefore you don't need to invest any more time in agonizing over wanting it?
Yep.
Wouldn't that make your life a lot easier? Have you ever been caught in the... Remember, the name of this series is What to Do When You Don't Know What to Do. Have you ever been stuck in I really want but I can't quite seem to get mode? Remember this. Whatever you get, you're going to have to maintain. Everything that you do get is going to take a piece of you. So here's a question to ask yourself. Why would you ever go through the work that it takes to obtain something that you have no heart to maintain once you get it? And we can make that as simple as toys that we obtain and realize only too late that we have to maintain. Are you laughing at me?
Yeah. is, eh?
What was it going to take for you to experience?
Ah, so what? Wait. Where do we acquire wisdom? Stop looking at me and judging me. Just mind your own business with my Jeep. It's my Jeep. It's not yours. The counsel of wise people. Here's a big question to ask. Whenever you want to obtain something, get the counsel of people who have obtained it and are maintaining it now, and see if they enjoy the process of maintaining it and why. Doesn't that make sense? Wouldn't you want to interview people who already have what you want so that you could find out what it costs to keep what you have?
Isn't that the purpose of your premarital counseling?
Yes.
Does anybody decide that they don't want what they...
Just recently.
I was joking, but it actually...
Just recently.
Okay.
Went through three sessions or so, and they came back to me and says, I don't think we need to do this right now. And I says, I agree with you.
That's incredible.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
All right. I hope that part was helpful. So I want to wrap up with 2 or 3 minutes in which... we're going to look at the story as told in Scripture, and we're going to look at it, I mean, really big picture. And sometimes we bore into individual verses. Let me tell you, one of the best ways to read Scripture is to step 20 clicks back from it to be able to appreciate the story as a whole, because we get a whole different viewpoint of what's going on. Here's my premise. Remember our theme for the morning. The responsibility is not just the process of choosing well, it is the process of managing the choices that we've made and honoring the choices that we've already made. So back in time past, God makes a choice. His choice is to create a particular type of living beings that are, we'll call humans. I'd like you to think of the story of Scripture as the story of God's agony at times and challenge of having to manage the first choice that He made. I'll create a man and a woman. I'll create them in my image so that I can have fellowship with them. How long did that choice go well? Now here's the thing. Was God at fault for what happened? No. But did God own the responsibility for what happened? Yes. The story of Scripture, as you look at it, and I listed some names here, Adam, Cain and Abel, progressive wickedness, leads to Noah and the flood, leads to the rebuilding of society, leads to God needing to, again, pick a single person, Abram, leads to a process of a large family, that moves into slavery, they move into a situation and they don't extract themselves, they stay in the situation too long and become slaves in the situation. God needs to send a liberator. Then we look at Joshua and we go on to Judges and all the prophets, and then we finally come to Jesus. So here it is. The gospel is the good news about God's personal responsibility for the choice that He made. A single choice. I would like to create a species with whom I can have fellowship. I'd like you to think about how many sub-choices God had to make as a result of that first choice. And what is the gospel message beyond that? The gospel message is God declaring to us, I will remain responsible for my choice. Isn't this what we want from other people? We want other people for whom we have chosen for in the past to know that they can have confidence in our commitment to be responsible for the choices that we've made. This is actually an amazing story. One choice. I will make humans. I will make them in my image. And if you actually read the Scriptures with discernment, there are times when it implies that God agonizes over, was this a good choice? Do you remember God's comment to Moses on the mountain when the people had rebelled down below? Anybody? I'll wipe them all out and I'll start over with you. Now, was that a real temptation or a threat? Well, we can't be sure, but I think it expresses a frustration on God's part. To be like God, to be sons of God, is to make the commitment to follow through on the choices that we've made. And a lot of times when we get to the point where we say, I don't know what to do, yeah, we do. We know what to do in the most general of senses. It's follow through on the choice that we made. We might not know the specifics, but we're really looking for a way to get out of the choice that we made in the past because it right now sucks in the present based on the choice that we've made in the past, and we really don't like it. So the kind of wisdom that I believe we need to pray for is the ability to be able to honor the choices we've made in the past. And I'm just going to wrap up with that. I think that's enough for us to just get our heads around for this whole week.